Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Yeah, having a beautiful time with you and with Boniface on the board. Already a cool broadcast coming through. And I hope you enjoying us as much as we enjoying your company. And time for us to join a member of Parliament, Ahmad Mandur Sheikh Imam, with the hot news from Parliament. Ahmad, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Once again, the waters have come. The waters are rising. And, well, the disaster management, maybe they're not compromising. Or have they been compromised? Ahmad Mandur Sheikh Imam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell us how you're doing this morning.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, brother Shafiq. Yes, indeed. You know, once again, I think we are caught off guard, even though we've expected these storms to be hitting KwaZulu-Natal particularly. But if you looked at yesterday alone, if you looked at the streets and the warnings that have been, even the premier of KwaZulu-Natal, Shisha, has also said that we need to stay indoors if necessary. People must move from risky and dangerous areas. I'm not sure where he's expecting them to move to, though. But I can tell you that most of the roads are blocked. They are flooded. It clearly indicates the vulnerable state we are in when you have catastrophes of this nature. Your poor infrastructure, again, you can see is the root cause of why we are where we are, because your storm drainage system is not able to accommodate any additional or excess water and things like that. The roads have got potholes. They're such large potholes. And the question I think we need to ask is, ever since the last flooding, what has happened? What has been done by the municipality of Itegwini until today? I mean, if you look at just the roads, you know, and it's very risky and dangerous, particularly if you're driving at night and you don't know where the potholes are, you can't see, you know, far ahead of you. It's very, very dangerous and risky. And I cannot understand when a municipality has a dedicated budget for things of this nature. They have a dedicated department dealing with issues like potholes and all that stuff. Why is it that, you know, it was not done from that time right up to now? And now that we've got this flooding, I can tell you that, I mean, there's no way. If you look at the M4, it's got a problem. The M7 has got a problem. The entire Pound Town area seems to be badly affected. The north of KwaZulu-Natal, which is Mshloti, Tongaat, Westbrook, all those areas are very badly. Mgeni Road is a no-go. Even the beachfront, the North Beach, it's flooded. The main or Tambo Parade, you cannot even pass there. But what does it tell you, Brett? Does it not give us a clear indication that we have poor quality of management at these structures? Because at government level, at local government level particularly, you know, I mean, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to know that, you know, that when you get the slightest of flood, that if your drainage system, your stormwater system cannot accommodate it, you're going to have serious problems. And that's exactly, they are nowhere to be found. The municipality is just nowhere to be found. I think the sooner we realize that we are in the wrong hands, that we need, you know, a complete turnaround here, strategy to deal with this. Now, I know that we are from National Parliament are making this a big thing, like we are God's gift to politics or people, that we're coming and giving you R1 billion or so to deal with this thing. That R1 billion means nothing if you see what's happening on the ground, but it's nothing. In fact, your infrastructure is so poor quality at this stage that you don't have to talk about repairing, because if you're going to repair anything, it's going to pack up again. It's exactly what's happening with Eskom. Every time you're having a blackout, something goes wrong, you have to go and repair it. You can repair it for a day, and the next day it breaks out again. It's exactly the same thing. So in terms of the delivery of services and the quality of people that we've got managing our affairs at local authority needs to be addressed. Otherwise, you're not going to go forward with this, I can tell you now.
Full marks to you, Ahmad. And, you know, you make a very valid point indeed, giving jobs for pals and, you know, getting the whole group disrespecting each other and, you know, taking each other. You know, we use the term taking each other for lux. But it seems as if the ratepayers have been taken for a big, big, big lux, Ahmad. Your thoughts?
Definitely, you know, and I said this before and I want to say it, it's not something that I want to encourage, but you don't have a choice, Brother Shafiq. Ratepayers must come together, all of them together, and say enough is enough. We are not going to be paying any more rates and taxes. That's it. Because what is the purpose of the rates and taxes? The rates and taxes you are paying to provide you a service. Now, what are you paying for if they're not providing you a service? So I think the time has come when we need to stand up and say enough is enough. We are now not going to pay. Because the complaints that you are lodging, in fact, the problem is even bigger than that. You can't even lodge a complaint because there's nobody there to receive the complaint, let alone do something about it. I think many people have been raising concern. They're trying to get hold of the municipality or the crisis that they got. Nobody's answering the telephone. So it's easy for the Premier Tezikalala to go out there and go and say, you know, you must move out from this area. Where must these people move out to? They say, where? You know these people. You know what happened a few weeks ago. You know what happened in July. You know about the 70-somewhat floods you had in 30 years alone. You know the vulnerable state these people find themselves in. You leave them there. Now you're coming and telling them they must move. Move to where? Tell me exactly where you're expecting them to move. Nowhere. So the thing is this, you know, man, it is shocking if you look at the conditions of our infrastructure. It is deteriorating rapidly to such an extent. I'm telling you, most of these areas will be no-go areas just now. Now, you're telling people they must stay at home. This is what you're telling them. Does he, the very same premier, understand that when you tell people to stay at home, what effect it has on the economy? What effect is it going to have? You want to talk about economic, to boost the economy of this country currently after what has happened with COVID and the flooding and the interaction, right? At the same time, you are saying because of your failure to provide quality services to the people, your failure to deal with this infrastructure and things, you're telling them to stay at home. So if everybody stays at home, what happens? Everything comes to a standstill. It's exactly like you're going back to the regulation that were put in for COVID. Don't go anywhere, almost stay at home. Is that the solution? Or do you address the problem, the root causes of why we are where we are? They're not intending to do that. So I can say again, give them billions of rands. Nothing is going to improve. Absolutely nothing is going to improve.
You know, Ahmed, you look at the Durban South Basin. It's, you know, one of the richest hubs in the country. And there you find SAPTREF closed down. Now you found a Toyota have been compromised. And I believe certain sections of Toyota still don't have power. And, you know, people are talking about when the rains were coming, Ahmed, there were footages going around, you know, on social media, actually showing you those canals, you know, that filled up last time and over flooded. And, you know that area well, where they call the place Big Ben and that engine garage. I believe you lived on top there many, many years ago. But I mean, all that place was compromised. And again, paranoia came through. The fear came to, and, you know, people said, oh, it's going to happen again. But the fact is, someone didn't do their job properly again, Ahmed.
There's no doubt about it. You know, I don't know. You know, one of the reasons for that, is that the quality of expertise that you've been using has been deteriorating over a period of time. The technicians, the experts, the engineers, and the kind of people that you've employed at these municipalities, go and compare them to what you have today, and that is the root cause. And I've said this before, that your expertise, your skills, have either gone into the private sector or they left the country and they're gone. And you're relying on people that are semi-skilled and not skilled, with 60% dropping out in the first year in TVET colleges, and the quality of education you're producing, you can imagine what kind of engineers and things we are producing in the country at the moment. And that is why we are having this problem. So your expertise and your skills is no longer there, number one, and they were not even given an opportunity to transfer their skills to. And thirdly, the quality of education that you're producing will tell you the quality of graduates you're going to produce. And the quality of the graduates is the result of it will be the result why you have what you have today.
Yeah, and the quality of people that you got running your municipality. I mean, you know, the Gumedes and all these sorts of people have come through, looted, and, you know, there have been political killings. I mean, people like Fawzia Peer and lots of people that could run the municipality properly have been marginalized, taken out of the equation. And it seems as if, you know, apartheid in reverse. But what is it producing? It's producing a South Africa that is heavily compromised because people that that have the know-how, people that are fit for the position of power, are being marginalized, Ahmed?
A large percentage of the people we employ are not fit for purpose. I want to be honest about that. It's because it's cadre deployment. It's because we employ people we know, people we like, people that will come out there and collude with you in terms of the corruption and the looting. People that will go and bring you numbers to come and vote on the day and convince the people. People that will provide you with the football. And that is why I want to sign. I want to even appeal to all the business people right from the top. And I see Johan Rupert is making some statements about where we are. And he says exactly what I've been saying for the last week. People on the ground don't realize how serious the situation is in the country. But I want to plead to all these people. Stop assisting these political parties that are not. At the end of the day, the more money you give them, which they are using and they are looting, and you're keeping them in power, it means that your future generation are going to suffer, and you're going to be the cause of it because you aided and abetted these people to be there to destroy this country and destroy the future of your children. That is what we need to do. We need to stop funding and supporting these organizations, no matter who they are, wherever they are. If people are not delivering in a particular area, you know, I'm saying don't support them at all, whether it's financial, through resources, through food parcels, and all these kind of aid you are giving. Stop giving it to political parties because they're using that to strengthen themselves, get more support. They use what you give, go and get the votes, they come back and they're destroying your future. So you can see the ripple effect it has on it. So you should be taking responsibility for it. That's what we should be doing. Otherwise, I want to tell you the future is bleak. No. The situation, if you go on the road, Brother Shepherd, no matter what car you drive, or how expensive your car it is, or how safe you think it is, I'm telling you, the roads are a no-go area for our people at this point in time. You are at such great risk, it's unbelievable. Give me one thing, Brother Shepherd, just one. Just one thing in the last 20-some-odd years that you think is better than where you were. Other than the fact that you can share the same toilet with somebody else. So I don't know. And I don't have a problem with not sharing a toilet with anybody and going to my own toilet. I don't have a problem. But other than that, what has improved here for us? Nothing. Nothing, nothing, nothing. We are going downhill every single day. And we still come and defend and defend and defend. Instead of learning from our mistakes and saying, let's correct these things. There's no intention to correct it because it's too far gone. Correcting it means you have to deal with some of the people that you have there, that you've employed. How are you going to deal with them when you've been benefiting from them for so long? How? They will expose you, so you can't. It's something you're going to sit with for the rest of your lives.
Ahmed, you know, you're talking about toilets and all that, but you'd be amazed. The whole of Durban is like a toilet. I mean, people, they stand and urinate anywhere. They do the other things everywhere. I mean, on stairs, I was shocked to see, you know, the culture of certain people that they have no self-respect. And Durban was actually, I mean, I believe a lot of metros around the country, even they say Gauteng has been compromised, that it's smelling like a sewage dump, Ahmed. And, you know, feces all over and urination and garbage not collected. I mean, I don't know. These are the things that have been clogging all the drains and all that. Ahmed, your thoughts?
Brother Shafut, let me tell you, it's worse than that. You know, you'll get these health inspectors who more often than not go for a bribe. They go and trouble many of these little restaurants and takeaways and things. Yet people outside, right outside those restaurants and takeaways, are urinating and things on the street. It's an, you know, it's unbearable. They sleep outside. The city will do absolutely nothing about it. People will eat and throw the stuff right outside there. What stops these cities from passing bylaws? Each municipality, they have the authority to pass bylaws. They have that authority. Why don't they do that so that they can clean up their own cities? Why don't they make it difficult for people to litter, to urinate, to sleep on those streets? I mean, you know, all these people even sleeping on the street, they come from somewhere. If you look at the number of children on the street, Brother Shepherd, surely they all got home somewhere. They come from somewhere. You'll be shocked. Maybe 99% of them are collecting child support grants. Their parents are collecting it. But the children are on the streets. It's like it's a lawless state where anybody and everybody does whatever they want to do. That is how it is. So if you know, they will go into a restaurant or a takeaway. They want you to comply with every little thing. But the man outside will be having an entire carcass lying there in the hot sun for the entire day. And that is not a risk to somebody's health. He can keep selling that thing, cooking it outside, frying it outside, cutting it outside, no refrigeration, with all the insects and everything. They don't worry about it. So I can tell you that the cities, now some will argue that because of the influx of people, but that's why we gave you funding, urban settlement development grant, so that you can enhance those urban areas because people are coming there because you're not creating jobs. So you're failing the people. You're doing exactly what the apartheid government did in terms of the migration system, where people had to move to other areas and go see their families once a year. That's what's causing dysfunctional families. But you seem to have learned nothing, absolutely nothing from the past. That's why I can ask you, without any doubt, tell me what is it that you're better off today than yesterday? Tell me what.
No, absolutely, Ahmad, you make a valid point indeed. And then you look at audits. I mean, you're not even getting clean audits from the municipalities. And if you ask them for audits, you know, they're dilly-dallying about the whole thing. And that, too, it seems as if the ANC, you know, is not putting much pressure of being a clean government or showing a clean, you know, transparency, Ahmad.
Why would they, Brother Shafat? 18 out of 257 municipalities only had a clean audit. 18 out of 257. Who governs most of them? The ANC. So it means that their own people are failing. So what consequences can there be for its own people who they put in there? Can't be. That is why I say again and again, separate politics from administration. Let a politician have nothing, absolutely nothing to do with who you employ in terms of your officials, your CFOs, your director generals, your municipal managers. Keep us politicians out of it so that you'll be able to hold these people to account. But how do you expect them to account when you, the politicians, are putting him in there? They are your friends, your families, your relatives, your cadres that fund you and collude with you. How are you going to do that? You can't do it. The state, the quality, every year, Brother Shafat, every year, the auditor's report will highlight the same thing, the same people that fail, the same department, the same municipality. What have you done to improve it? Nothing. You're going and putting administrators into some of these municipalities. You're putting it under administration. You're putting your own people to go and administer it too. So what is going to change? It can't on... If you're going to continue relying on these government institutions like local government and things to sustain your well-being, for these parties to sustain themselves, they must get money, and they're getting it from there. And on, if that continues, you can never improve the services on the ground because you have to put in your own people there. Because can you imagine, if I run a municipality, I'm the mayor, and if I have absolutely nothing to do with who gets the tenders, how much I, nothing, an independent person, what benefit is it going to be then to the party? Nothing, right? So that's the point. They need to put people there that will collude with them.
As Ahmed says, you need to put the rubber stamp there. Yeah. Yeah, there's it. Approved by us. But there are still no clear answers as to when contractors will start rebuilding the gutted National Assembly building. I mean, hey, I'm missing you in that original parliament. What's happening there, Ahmed? More assessments needed before repair work can be done? Or are they looking for contractors who they like, Ahmed?
Yeah, let me tell you, first of all, there was a company that had done the report. And there was some indication until, of course, we put our stamp of authority where it was, because the indications were that they were going to have some work done by certain period of time. And then the question arose as to, but how is it, what process are you going to go follow, the supply chain processes, the procurement processes? How is it that this company, who was giving us a report on what they were identified, is already saying that they will have that, that, and that ready? They're going to be working on that. Who gave them the authority? So I think that close the doors. And that's what delayed it even further. Now, I know there was a presentation on Friday. I unfortunately could not attend the meeting because I've had so much going on Friday. But I know that we will get one this week on Wednesday, the Chief Works meeting. But, Brother Shepherd, I can tell you, you won't be seeing Parliament for the next 5 years minimum. You won't be seeing the Parliament that you saw before for minimum of 5 years, I can tell you. The damage is extensive, and at this stage, they don't even know whether you should break it down and rebuild it, because remember, it's a heritage site as well, so there's certain things you are restricted on. The other hand is, which sections can you redo, refurbish and renovate, or you have to break it down. So there's a whole lot of questions. We haven't even had access to it as yet, but I'm told that now we will be able to get access to, because my four offices, they got it down anyway. So it's nowhere near end. Now that the ANC is Swane, Gauteng and all is running out of the hands of the ANC, or they losing from urban or areas, metro from metro to metro, they don't have the interest of moving Parliament to Pretoria. All along they wanted that because they want to take it away from the Western Cape because of the DA. Now when they see they're losing the other side, so there's nowhere to take it, I don't know whether they're going to bring it to Council or the Telebridge. Until, of course, in 2 years' time, when they lose KwaZulu-Natal, then they may decide to take it somewhere else. So you can see they're running out of options. Remember, at one stage, they even considered, Brother Shafford, to reduce the number of provinces. I've actually been asking to eradicate them, get rid of all provincial structures. It's a waste of taxpayers' money. But they were speaking of reducing it. Do you know why? When they lost Western Cape, they thought if they got good support in certain areas like the Eastern Cape, so they'll get the Eastern Cape to amalgamate to the Western Cape so they can get it back. That was the intention. But as you're losing support in the other provinces now, in other words, what I'm saying in a nutshell, the end is very close for the ANC. And so they're running out of options. So even reducing the provinces and things is not going to help them much. Moving Parliament is not going to help them because you're moving it to somewhere you were governing, but now you're no longer governing there. So how are you going to move it there? So they're in serious trouble.
I'm looking at a message here, and it's from Harun. Harun says, I always listen to this show, and I really enjoy Ahmed with you, Shafa'at. I want to tell Ahmed Mansoor Sheikh Imam that if it was a person of another color that burned down the parliament, he would have been behind bars locked and the keys thrown away. But it seems as if this man who did the arson, he's being treated with kid gloves. And Ahmed, I'm really appalled. How do you respond to Harun there, Ahmed?
Brother Harun, you are very lucky that that person's name wasn't Ismail or something, because then they would have said ISIS burnt it down. Or it was a terrorist. So you're very lucky. But you are correct in your observation. There's not much attention being given to such a serious issue. And then it makes you wonder, what is really going on beyond, closed doors? This guy, of course, there are people that are defending him and whatever it is. But I must agree with you. Such a serious matter, so much of damage is caused, and we're hearing very little about it. And this is a matter that should be expedited, because people want to really, get to the bottom of what is going on. And for some reason or the either, they've got the wrong person, they believe. They're not convinced themselves, although all indications are that he knew exactly what he was doing and then he went for a specific purpose. But, I don't know whether it's the lack of quality in the South African police services to be able to deal with a matter of this nature. Given the fact that there were many weaknesses on that particular day, the protection services were not there. The South African police services themselves were also responsible for the outside of parliament, but base they were not available. and together with other reports that came in from the public works and others, which was not attended to, of the risks of a fire and things. So there's so many things to really look at there. But I do understand that there should be more urgency in this matter so that we can get to the root cause of exactly what has happened and deal with it. But it also tells you the fact that our intelligence is so ineffective in the country. You don't know what to expect next. And here in the country, we only worked after the fact. After everything is happened, then you come and interrogate the things. So your intelligence is not, all your intelligence is not, whether you talk about the police, criminal investigation, or you talk about the intelligence of state security, or you talk about the military intelligence, nothing seems to actually be. If you had tomorrow Russia deciding to attack us, we are gone, we are history.
Absolutely, Ahmed. And I'm just reading an excerpt from an article here. It says more than 100,000 people had signed a petition by Friday evening calling for the expulsion of Stellenbosch University student Teens Detroit, who was filmed urinating on a fellow student's Babalo Ndiwanyana study material. And this is what he said, that this was a racially motivated attack and a response to his action. Dutoy claimed, this is what we do to black boys, the petition on change.org reads. But it seems as if racism is still very rife in this country. And it's sad that, playing this game in this time, one would have thought 30 years later, we would have, respected each other totally. Ahmed, are your thoughts?
Yeah, brother, one needs to get to the bottom of what actually happened there. It clearly, all indications are it's racially motivated, and you are correct that racism is a serious problem. In fact, my observation, racism is worse now than it was before. In fact, we are also underpinning the seriousness of racism, black community against other communities as well. It's a very serious problem as far as racism is concerned. So the so-called rainbow nation we're talking about doesn't exist. It's only a dream. But very importantly, I think that the student is suspended. The matter should be dealt with appropriately, timelessly. And if it is found that it is racially motivated, he must be expelled. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the Human Rights Commission must come in terms of this, and they must deal with it. But what I do find, I must also say, that when it is a white person in this country or an Indian person who makes a racial remark or insult or abuse or whatever it is, everybody jumps on it. But when it is the other way around, Brother Shafat, everybody is very quiet about it. I can say it without any doubt. You can go and report to the Human Rights Commission on matters the other way around, and I can tell you, you hardly ever get a response from them.
Yeah, but absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you absolutely. And alhamdulillah, many literally got away with abusing other groups, but they got away. They got away. I mean, you can open up a whole dossier and look at that. Ahmed, you were absolutely, mashallah, as usual. Your parting words this morning?
Well, Brother Shafat, I see the sun is coming out now. Mashallah, I hope it comes out. It's going to actually protect our people. I must also say that hasn't stopped our brothers from fishing on the pier, despite the rain.
Okay.
Anyway, but I think what I want to say is the roads are bad. People must just try and avoid all these roads where there's potholes that I know sometimes you don't know. I actually reversed out yesterday in an area when I saw in front of me this pool of water that I was not willing to take the chance. And people were hooting behind me. I didn't care. I wanted them out of the way so I can go back because I was not willing to take the chance. And I might plead to our brothers and sisters, don't take the chance. You don't know where those holes are, those potholes. You don't know how big they are and things like that. So just stay away from those areas particularly. Restrict your travel. I know that, people are getting frustrated of staying at home. But alhamdulillah, I see that the sun is coming out and I think it might be the end of the rain and things.
Sure.
And we make dua that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala protects all our people. And protects us from any further disasters in Shilpa.
Ahmed, before I let you go, and you said, I can see clearly now the rain has gone, and you can see
exactly.
All the obstacles are taken away. But Ahmed, you know what? Lovely weather for sugar beans, a lovely aloo in it, and maybe puri or half ka roti with lovely mint chutney. Come on, Ahmed, let's go for it.
Hey, you're right, Brother Shafiq. I think these are the days that you need to. You could stay at home and have some of those lovely stuff that, you know, where you get served by our wonderful ladies. They come and prepare all these things for us. Yes, no doubt about it, yes. But gone are those days. Gone are those days. But I'm very fortunate in that, Brother Shafiq. Very, very fortunate to most people. I live in an apartment block where I have a grandmother living in one apartment. The one next to me is a grandson. On the other side is a daughter. And I get the smell of all these beautiful curries that they are cooking. You know, so at least I got the luxury of the smell. MashaAllah, very nice. Very nice family, yeah. So, yes, you know, you sometimes feel like you're at home. You know, when just the smell of it makes you feel you're at home. Alhamdulillah.
Don't worry, one day we're going to crush a beans bunny together, Ahmed. You have a beautiful and lovely, lovely day ahead. Talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Yes, to all of you that send in messages, a big jazakallah khair to you, you and you, and to Boniface. Brilliant, brilliant engineering as usual. Keep it locked on to Marcus Sahaba for beautiful programming and a lot of knowledge coming through.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.